Welcome to the WP Builds Podcast, bringing you the latest news, interviews, and fun for the WordPress community. Now, welcome your host, Nathan Wrigley.
Hello there, and welcome once again to the WP Builds Podcast. You've reached episode number 453, entitled Does WordPress Offer Anything to a Younger Audience? With Taylor Drayson. It was published on Thursday, the 22nd of January, 2026. My name's Nathan Wrigley, and I'm going to try and keep this very short so that we can get straight into Taylor's stuff. Just a couple of things. If you're interested in getting your product or service out in front of a WordPress-specific audience, we have exactly that. wpbuilds.com/advertise to find out more. And you never know, you could have your product mentioned in this podcast right about here. Okay, what have we got for you today? Well, today I'm talking to Taylor Drayson. Taylor Drayson is one of those rare things, a young person in the WordPress space. If you've attended WordPress events and things like that, you've probably noticed that the age demographic does tend to skew slightly older. So we're talking about that as well as a whole bunch of other things. So I get an introduction to Taylor. We talk about youth in the WordPress space, why he has chosen the tech stack of WordPress, where he's making his products or services available to you. And there's a fair amount of that going on. He's a very busy person indeed. We talk about the role of community in the WordPress space going forward and so much more. And I hope that you enjoy it. I am joined on the podcast by Taylor Drayson. Hello, Taylor.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Taylor is significantly younger than me. and that might be a point that we get to discuss in the podcast. He has loads of things going on at the moment in the WordPress space. And so his age is not going to be the main focus of anything. At least I don't intend it to be. But Taylor, just before we get into this whole thing, do you want to just give us your little potted bio? Tell us a few things about yourself, specifically related to WordPress, I guess.
Yeah, so I have been working in WordPress professionally since about 2019. I finished college and basically went self-employed the month after and have been doing that for 6 years now or so. Absolutely love it. It's great fun. I get to work with a whole range of different clients building WordPress sites. recently started venturing out into other areas of WordPress. So I have a membership site that I upload and post kind of tutorials and code for basically extending your website without having to add a plugin that does a million things, but you only need one of them. Working with other companies. So I have WP Extended, which is a plugin that I'm a partner with, Dan Barrett, and it's a kind of a Swiss Army knife plugin that adds lots of little helpers that kind of should be in WordPress but aren't, and just kind of adding the use quality of life features essentially. And then lastly, I help WP Manage Ninja with all of their community side of things, just managing it and keeping everyone updated essentially.
Yeah, nice. Boy, do they have to keep people updated as well, because there's a lot that they do. Let's get into that though. Firstly, let's get it out of the way. Let's get the sort of age question out of the way, because we were talking before I hit record. Although this sounds like a bit of a glib thing, I think there is a serious point in this. And that is to say that I attend quite a lot of WordPress events. And if I cast my eye around the room, I think I am somewhere in the middle of that aggregate age. There are people that are older than me. There's quite a few people that are younger than me, but I don't see people a lot younger than me. That is to say, you know, you're in your kind of 20s, and I don't think that's typical for 20-year-olds to be coming up into the WordPress space. So let's just talk a little bit about that. So if we were to cast our minds back, rewind the clock, I don't know, let's say 7 years or something like that. In the UK, 18 years old is typically when people are finishing these things called A-levels. Yeah. And at that point, they might choose to go to university or embark on a career path. How did that pan out for you? How did you decide to get into web dev and WordPress?
Yeah, so my dad is self-employed. So my dad is a full-time magician, but he also runs a design agency himself on the side when he's not kind of doing shows and things. And so I always looked up to him because he was always at home. He was always like working for himself. And I kind of loved that idea. And that's kind of where I got the idea of going self-employed. I worked part-time at an agency during college, building websites, and kind of realized I could do it better. I didn't, you know, there were a couple of things that I didn't like and I thought I could do this better. And so, yeah, I think the kind of combination of the agency that I got the experience from, where I was talking to clients, I was building sites and kind of learning as I was going, really. And my dad being a big inspiration for kind of setting the path where I was living at home. If this, you know, this business didn't work out, I'm not going to be on the street. I'm not going to be homeless. I'm not going to have, you know, I'm still going to have somewhere to live. And so I didn't really have anything to lose. I wasn't going to go into debt because I just thought for the kind of the area that I wanted to go into, people want results. People want to see that you can deliver something rather than what do you have on a piece of paper that tells me that you can do that. And I think the kind of proving what you can do and showing what you can do, especially when you run a business, is far more important than having a degree, for example.
Yeah.
So I kind of just jumped 2 feet into it, kind of just started my business and started finding clients, essentially.
When you started this little bit just then, you mentioned how much you respect your father. Gosh, there's not many people who openly say that. I think your father is, hopefully he gets to listen to this kind of thing. He must be very proud when he hears you say something like that. Being a father of many children, I would love to hear those words from time to time.
I was very, very close with him. And I think part of that has been to do with the fact that he was always at home. You know, I saw him a lot. There's a lot of people that don't see their parents because they're always at work and they always come home tired and exhausted. You know, all I saw from my dad was he gets paid, he does something he loves, and he for the most part has a pretty, you know, happy life where he's doing something he loves and gets paid for it. You know, what more could you want?
So I
very much look up to him, and we also have very similar interests. We're both very kind of geeky. We both love tech, we both love gadgets and things like that. We've, you know, he's got 3D printers at home now, and things like that. So you know, we both bond over a lot of similar stuff. So I also had that kind of fallback where if I had an email from a client, I'm like, I don't know how to handle this, I could go down to him and say, hey, can you help me reply, or what, you know, what do I do in this situation?
Yeah,
which not a lot of people do have. They kind of have to make the mistakes themselves, or you know, whatever. But I had that kind of safety in a way that, you know, others don't.
Yeah, that's such a nice sort of beginning story. I mean, obviously it sounds like from an early age you were surrounded by the sort of tech that he was providing, that maybe inculcated an interest in you, and now you're a self-proclaimed nerd as well. But how come WordPress? Because given how young you are, we know that the tech landscape was broad and rich and deep by the time you were beginning to make decisions. So, you know, you could have gone off in all sorts of different directions, but you chose WordPress, which, again, I'll make the point, doesn't seem like a typical choice these days. How did that come about?
I think a lot of it came from the fact that my dad had one of the first websites when the internet was kind of existed.
Oh, wow.
And kind of he had maybe one of the very first kind of domains and things like that. And so he's always been building websites, things like that. And then obviously when WordPress came around, it was, you know, pretty much revolutionary at the time, back in, you know, the 2000s. And so he kind of started using that. And was building websites and had been for, you know, 20 years or so with WordPress. And I guess, again, looking up to him, he used WordPress. He knew WordPress, so he could help me and teach me and things like that. It's now actually the other way around. My dad comes to me and goes, Taylor, I've got this problem. Can you run it, write a little script for me or whatever? but that was all I really knew. That was what web development looked like, web design looked like for me back in 2019. You know, the kind of the proper coding, I like to call it, which is, you know, not really, but people that had, you know, degrees or had proper programming skills I was very much using Divi when I first started. And again, that was because he used it. So I just kind of followed what he was doing. I've kind of since then evolved and I've got a lot more into the development side of things. I like building like little mini web apps and plugins and things like that. But that's where I kind of, you know, how I got to it, because that's what he did.
Yeah.
I was just following where he went, really.
Yeah. One of the things that's been really great for me, so I'm older than you, obviously, by a considerable margin. And when I began, there was no CMSs and things like that. It was just, you know, you had to open up a text editor, basically. There weren't even, like, really much in the way of IDEs. So you'd open up a text editor, you'd write out the raw HTML, tables were the thing, there was no CSS, and then CSS came along and yada, yada, yada. And then CMSs came along, so WordPress was one of those. But what I discovered quickly upon getting into the WordPress space was that there was this whole like community of people. And so when I started attending events, I was surrounded by people very similar to me, not only in terms of interest, but also in terms of age. And so when I talk about the WordPress community, that I know that there's a familiarity there for me. But I don't know what it's like for you. I don't know if you've attended. Well, I know that you have because you mentioned that you have. But I don't know if you attend regularly these kind of events. But what is it like for you when you go? Do you feel like a fish out of water, like this youngster? And is that kind of odd, kind of slightly off-putting? I don't know. I'll open-ended question.
So, yeah, I mean, when I first started, I was 19 when I first started my business. Mm. So that was a very young age to be starting a business. I joined networking groups and things like that. And again, I was, you know, probably 10, 15 years younger than probably the youngest person in the room. But because I'm only child. And so I was very kind of, I just got on with it. I looked after myself. I would go to the cinema by myself, whatever, because it didn't bother me. I was happy in my own company. But I also found that I grew up around a lot of adults. So I was pretty mature for, I would say, a 19-year-old.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
I was very ill. I had Crohn's disease, and I was very ill during kind of the end of my school years, and, you know, in and out of hospital. So when I was kind of doing my A-levels and things like that, I was studying, working for the agency, and kind of just trying to get through, you know, the illness and things, whereas most other people were going out partying, drinking, which I never had an interest in. Because I just saw it as a waste, you know, a waste of money, a waste of time. They probably have had better experiences, but now I'm kind of paying the dividends where I now have a stable career. I do something I love, and I get to wake up every day and do that, which, you know, there are people that have degrees I know in my friend groups that don't even do anything with their degree. You know, they're in debt. They're paying the degree debt, but yet have a completely different job. And so it's that trade-off that I never really understood, you know, the drinking side and things like that, partying. And again, neither of my parents really were big drinkers. My mum liked to drink and go out with her friends socially, but my dad, you know, probably more the nerdy side of it, would stay home and prefer to be on his computer tinkering away, kind of thing. So, you know, there's that. And again, it comes back to having a lot of respect and looking up to my dad a lot.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think it'll be interesting to see how the WordPress community goes in the next, let's say, decade. So we're 22 years into the project. It feels like if it were to get another 22 years under its belt, so let's say the age of 44, it'd be interesting to see if that demographic, you know, if it fills up at the bottom, basically, if there's young people like yourself coming through, because it sort of doesn't feel like it. It seems like out there in the wider world, there are more interesting things, you know, React and all of these wonderful things and AI and all of that that is making it possible. So I wonder, do you sort of get itchy feet, given that you've still got like the vast majority of your career ahead of you? Are you wedding yourself, binding yourself to WordPress in perpetuity, or do you cast your eye around and think about other opportunities in different tech spaces?
It's an interesting one. So I have one project at the moment that I'm building in Statamic, I don't know how you say it. It's a Laravel-based CMS by Jeff McDade. And it's absolutely amazing. Like, there's so, the developer experience is absolutely hands down next to none. I absolutely love it. I think with WordPress, the issue we're going to kind of face is this tech debt. Is why would you go for something like WordPress when there's so much tech debt? From a developer side of point of view, I think this is probably the best way to look at it, is from someone who builds websites for a living, like an agency owner, a freelancer. Why would you use something that has 20-something years of tech debt with code that is irrelevant now, but we can't remove it because we risk breaking 40% of the internet, for example? You know, there are so many better tools in regards to if you're going to start from scratch. I think where WordPress is kind of heading these days is the people that don't have the technical skills, and that's kind of where Matt and the WordPress Foundation are heading with the block editor, was trying to build something that could compete with likes of Squarespace, the likes of, you know, the no code builders essentially. And it just does come down to that. I think that the ecosystem is what drives WordPress, and I felt strongly about that, is that I think if WordPress didn't have the plugin ecosystem, the community, it probably wouldn't be where it was today. You know, that's one of the main reasons people stick around with WordPress.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because
the barrier to entry, right?
Yeah, it's got a low barrier to entry. It's obviously got this no code option at the moment in Gutenberg, plus all the third party, you know, Elementor and all of these other different things that are bind into to WordPress. But also it's kind of got that so on the one hand, its heritage is a bad thing because it's got this tech debt and it has to, you know, it has to support things, have this backwards compatibility built in, which is a kind of a noose around its neck, but also it's got a heritage. So it's the exact same argument as a pro and the exact same argument as a con. And on the pro side, it's got 40% of the web. And I guess at some point, the momentum that juggernaut has kind of just keeps itself going. It'd be interesting to see if the brakes go on a little bit, and then, you know, should it decline? Does it decline slowly and then all at once? Or does it just keep going at 40%? Or indeed, does it rise? And I think you're right. There's a lot of endeavors at the moment to make it more future-proof, let's say. So a lot of ideas around AI and building AI directly inside the block editor, not like there's an AI sort of client, but you've got some sort of MCP adapter or an API connection or something like that, so that it makes it a little bit more, I don't know, 2025, let's put it that way.
I think it's the community that is going to be the biggest driving force for it, is that if there isn't the younger generation, you know, my generation and things like that, that are pushing it forward, are contributing, are using it, you know, whether or not we're, you know, building WordPress clients, whatever, really, if you're not going to use it, you know, there's no incentive to invest the amount of money it is to have full-time, you know, open source contributors, because it's not going to be making any more money because people aren't creating new sites. And there are other tools for that.
So I'm just going to ask you about your peers, basically. And so I don't know how widely, you know, you mix amongst people of a similar age to you and talk about this kind of stuff. But just, really, I'm asking you to put your finger in the air a little bit. Does anybody of your age, do you know anybody who's even vaguely interested in WordPress? I mean, I'm presuming that anybody that's got a business needs a website. But amongst your age group and your peers, do you see WordPress being used, or is it other stuff?
I think, especially with the AI, it's changed a lot in the past couple of years. If you asked me this a few years ago, it would probably be a different answer. Mm-hmm. I think everyone knows what WordPress is, or at least they've heard of it. And they know that they're like, oh, is this a WordPress site, or I can kind of build a site on WordPress, whatever. But I would say that most people don't care. At the end of the day, people that are not website builders, developers, whatever you want to call them, they just want a website. You know, they don't care if it's accessible or not, because for the most part, they have no idea they even exist about regulations and things like that. They don't care. You know, they'll put a, you know, yellow text on a white background, for example, because they just don't know any better, right?
Yeah.
And until the standards of things like that, where they block you from doing that, or start adding in the accessibility warnings and say, look, you shouldn't use this color, which I think the block editors started doing.
Yeah, there are little bits of contrast creeping in,
but just things like that, they don't care what it's built with. You know, there's no advantage or disadvantage. They're just going to go to an AI and say, I need to build a website, and whoever's paid the most money to appear in the AI results is going to get recommended, you know. And I don't think, you know, I have that many developer friends my age.
Okay, right.
Most of the people that I hang around with, and whether they're WordPress people or developer, you know, proper developers, I call them, they're all probably 10, 12 years older than me, minimum.
Right,
you know,
yeah.
Even, and people are, you know, all the way up to like 60 and stuff.
Yeah.
And they're,
yeah,
you know, original developers that did it with textbooks and you know.
It's me.
Notepad and things like that, right?
I've still got them above my head. They're all the JavaScript Bible and things like that. Yeah, there's absolutely loads of them. Yeah, we learned the internet from a book because the internet wasn't good enough to learn from the internet at that point. Now you've got YouTube and, you know, a myriad of different courses. So again, sort of coming back to that thing, it does sound like there is a thing to worry about here. If you're in the WordPress community, it does feel like, you know, we are at a bit of a tipping point in terms of demographics, age demographics, that maybe that's something that we need to be mindful of. I'm pretty sure that the people who need to worry about this are worrying about it, whether or not they're going to be effective in changing that and making it of interest to younger people. I don't know. But not just the age demographics. I think the geographical demographics play a big part. So, for example, if you were to go to an event like WordCamp Asia, then it feels like that part of the world is really interested much more than other parts of the world are or have been. So you go, and the crowd does look a lot younger. There are many, many young people walking about. They've seen it as a really solid way to make a living, just like you. Yeah. You know, they're looking.
The opportunity is so much bigger when you have the internet. When you come from a country where the, you know, average salary is a lot less than a Western country that is, you know, well populated and has good GDP, things like that. It's a great way. The internet itself is a great way to make money. And that's kind of what they've realized, is that if I want to make money, it's going to be building some sort of SaaS tool that solves a problem. It's going to be building, you know, helping people with their website in, you know, the Western world, because they can charge, you know, more, but still less than what somebody in the Western world can, you know, afford to charge.
Yeah, it's really interesting. That whole conversation is fascinating, and all of the different pieces of the jigsaw puzzle that need to be in place for that to happen. So, you know, CMSs need to be available and free. That's one nice feature of WordPress. It's freely downloadable. You know, there's lots of documentation out there so that you can learn it, but also the infrastructure in each individual country needs to be robust so that there's a reliable internet connection that you can afford to pay for and pay those bills and that kind of thing. And all of that seems to be a more or less a global thing now. You know, you go to any part of the world and there is predictably reliable, fast internet, certainly fast enough to do the work of a web developer. And so maybe we have reason to not be quite as concerned. Maybe in the parts of the world where you and I live, the demographics are going to get older and skew older, but maybe in different parts of the world, that will not be the case and the project will keep going. It's an interesting conversation. Let's turn our attention, though, to some of the stuff that you have been doing. You mentioned your work with WP Managed Ninja. Let's leave that till the very end. We'll first of all go to some of the projects that you're either doing yourself or you're doing in collaboration with somebody else. The first one I'm going to mention is WP Extend. You can find that at the easy-to-remember URL, wpextended.io. I said WP Extend just then. I meant WP Extended. wpextended.io. And if you go there, you are going to find, well, it says WP Extended, the modular all-in-one WordPress plugin. What is this doing? Who are you doing it with?
So this was a conversation that I had with Dan Barrett back in one of the WordCamp Europes a couple of years ago. We were sat in some dodgy cafe having a pint of beer, and he was telling me about, you know, this plugin that he had been creating over the past couple of years. And I just loved the idea because I could see it solved a problem that I'd been having in my own, you know, business and running and maintaining clients. And I was kind of like, oh, this would be a cool idea. Or, you know, have you thought about doing this? And we just hit it off, you know, pretty much instantly. Both had the same vision of what the plugin should be and what we would want it to look like and things like that. And so we decided to join as a partnership and both kind of work on it and build it as a solution for WordPress agency owners and business owners. But the idea is that it adds lots of little plugins into a single modular plugin that, you know, you only need to enable the features that you want. So if you only need three of the modules from the 40 plus modules that we have, then you only enable them and only the three modules run. The idea behind it is that you have less plugins to maintain. A lot of people kind of have the idea that, you know, more code is more bloat, but if the code's not running, then it's not going to be slowing down your website and things like that. But I think the biggest thing is the conflicts. Because we have control over the whole code base of every single module, if there's a conflict, we can fix that. Whereas you kind of left to your own devices, where if you have a plugin conflict between two open source contributors of plugins, that they only have a free version, there's no real incentive for them to fix it, because, you know, they're doing it for free, or, you know, they may not want to do it, they may not be able to do it, or they may have just abandoned it. So the idea is that we can very much have control over all integrations and modules, but also have cross module integrations. So if you enable one module, you get extra settings if you've got another module.
Okay, that's neat. Yeah. That's that. I mean, man, so, there's a boatload of functionality in here. So really, it looks like it's aimed at, you know, people like yourself who are building WordPress websites, because a lot of it is taking place on the back end. It's about doing things in the WP admin area, mainly, I think. There are over 40, it says, over 40 different, I'm going to use the word modules, I think that's the word that you use, but the ones that you highlight right at the top of the page are, you enable admin columns, so the ability to, well, I'll read it, transform your WordPress admin with customizable columns that display exactly the information you need. So in data views, you can, you know, change the way that they look. Code snippets, the ability to have code snippets and, I guess, inject them in different parts of the site. You'll also enable SMTP email so that you don't have to have a third-party plugin for that. Folder management as well, and it says organize your post pages and media into folders with drag and drop functionality. And then there's just this whole laundry list of other ones, and I'll just honestly at random I'm gonna pick some out. So export users, hide the WP version, hide admin notices, bet people love that, limit login attempts, clean up the dashboard, disable auto updates, debug mode, disable comments and XML RPC, menu editor, pixel tag manager, 404 homepage, a different quick search, it says, and rollback manager. I mean, honestly, I just picked a random selection of about 10 there. There's loads here. Do you keep it at that, or do you keep extending it? Do you keep adding new ones in?
We kind of just listen to what users request. We are very picky about what modules we add, because with anything, if you add something, you can't remove it. So you have to support it and maintain it. So we're careful about what modules we do add, because, you know, we want to make sure that we maintain it and we have a level of kind of quality that we want to maintain. You know, we want it to be something that we would be happy to put on our client site, something that looks good, works well, but also, you know, is not going to cause issues. A lot of the modules we added are stuff that we wanted ourselves, and we were like, I don't want to add another plugin for this, or something that doesn't even really exist in a plugin. You know, we had the disk usage widget, which was something that my friend and I we built, and it was just showing you how big the folders are on the main dashboard. The uploads folder and your plugins folder and things like that. Very basic stuff, but it's nice to have at a glance, and there's not really a widget for it. So we just kind of built it and then added it into the plugin in the end. And it's just, making those tweaks that make WordPress nicer to use and more quality of life stuff. Especially with things like you switching users. That's one of the main ones I used a lot, because when you're doing any sort of login or any sort of membership site, having been able to switch between is so much nicer than having to log out every time and log in again.
Yeah, there's some really curious ones in here as well for things that I've never really thought about. But then when I see it, I think, oh, that's an interesting idea. So this one immediately caught my attention. It's called Post Type Switcher, and it allows you to change the post type of any post or page instantly without losing that content. So I guess, I don't know, you've set up a custom post type or something like that, and you realize that this newer custom post type is actually where that content belongs. And of course, you could go and copy and paste it and yada yada yada, but wouldn't it be nice if you could just click some buttons and it now belongs over there instead of in the original custom post app, all of that kind of stuff. And things like, you, I guess you've got it, things in the media library, you change that and you enable it so that you can view it in different ways. There's just an absolute boatload in here, and I confess I'd not actually heard of this one, so this is a bit of a revelation to me. I think this is going to be interesting, and I imagine it enables you when you deliver a client website to sort of tidy things up a little bit so that the experience that they get is a little bit more bespoke and perhaps a little bit more fitting to what they need, as opposed to just the blunt user roles and permissions that WordPress has.
Yeah, exactly. It's just adding those things that really make, you know, the stuff that are in a lot of newer CMSs that are kind of just standard and most people would assume are there.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, WordPress doesn't have a lot of these, or if they do, they put them behind a filter. And, you know, not everybody knows how to run a custom plugin or doesn't know how to add code snippets or whatever. So having a toggle for it with a nice UI just makes it a lot easier, especially if you're managing multiple sites. The original reason Dan actually built this plugin was if for an internal tool for all of his agency client sites that he maintained. He spent about 2 or 3 days a week just updating plugins, and then having to check that every single plugin that he updated didn't conflict with another plugin. And he said he just spent so much time just checking and updating the sites that he just lost so much time and obviously money from that.
Yeah, so the idea here is that it's just this modular approach. Lots of things that you might typically have a plugin for, you know, dozens of them in many cases. It may be the case that this can handle quite a lot of that heavy lifting, and you just switch on the bits that you need and switch off the bits that you don't need. I'll draw people's attention, because I know if I don't mention it, people will complain. The pricing page is there. Really nice aggressive pricing you got here. So you can get a single site license. You very rarely see anything beginning in a 2. It usually starts in a 4 or a 9 or something like that. So $29 for a single domain, and then it goes up $119 if you want 50 domains, and there's an unlimited license. This is on an annual basis, $199, but there's also lifetime pricing, which is nice. $99 if you just want to grab it for good for your single domain. $249 for 50, and you can do the full Monty, $499 for unlimited domains for life. And also, one of the things that I don't know, maybe it's the nerd in me, I always end up on the changelog because I want to see that bit. And that's nice. You know, you've clearly got a lot going on with this plugin, and it makes me, you know, that sort of stuff. Maybe it doesn't matter to everybody, but seeing regular updates and fixes, but not just fixes, got features being added and improvements and things like that. And so, bravo. Last time it was updated was, you know, not that long ago, a couple of weeks or something like that. And very frequently prior to that. So, yeah, this looks great. Thank you for mentioning that.
Yeah.
All right.
It's been good fun. We actually spent a whole year without really a release, because we basically refactored the entire plugin. We have now a framework, so it means that if we ever want to add a new setting, it's like 3 lines of code.
Oh, nice.
Everything is automatically like handled by adding the fields on the front end and the settings page and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
So it allows us now to basically build a new module in kind of minutes rather than days.
Which,
is a lot nicer.
Well, the links for that will be in the show notes, but I want to draw everybody's attention to something else that you do, something entirely different, but I guess it's got the sort of same flavor to it. This is Snippet Club. This is a .com. Snippet Club. Say that again. Snippetclub.com. Go and check that out and then come back to the podcast. It probably is exactly what you'd imagine it is, but tell us anyway. There's probably no mystery here. It's a membership site for snippets, I guess.
So Snippet Club was so I used to just write snippets for anything, because I was very against having to add a plugin for something.
I'm with you.
Because with adding a plugin, it's just not adding a plugin. It's having to maintain it, having to keep it updated. Potentially somebody may remove the feature that I actually installed the plugin for. And sometimes when a small feature or small integration only is 20 lines of code, it's much easier to just put that into a snippet and just keep it in the child theme or whatever, or code snippet plugin or whatever. And I used to just write them. I used to be like, I'll just write this myself. And I built up a massive collection of code snippets that I wrote for myself that just solved my own problems. That was all it was originally, is I was just writing snippets. But then I was using them on multiple sites and then trying to remember where I'd put the code snippet, and I'd go back to a site I'd built three months ago or whatever.
The pain is real.
3 years ago. And so I was like, let me put it in one place.
Yeah.
You know, I would share the code snippets with friends and stuff like that. And people were saying, you know, why didn't you sell a membership to it so people can get access to it? A lot of the tutorials were just me solving my own issue and just sharing it with people that, and they can have access to it. Because adding a snippet is so much easier than adding a whole plugin.
So this was a kind of scratch your own itch curiosity project that then you thought, actually, you know what? I've got enough of these now that there's some value in it. And so that's, I guess, what you're going to get if you go to snippet.club. Sorry, I'm so butchering the URLs today. snippetclub.com, let's get it right. Then you'll be able to see there's a menu at the top with home and then tutorials and membership and so on. I don't know what the number is at the moment of different things and pieces of, you know, content you've got on there, but it certainly seems it's a lot. I think you've got 28 pages of snippets, something along those lines. So do you have any recollection of how much content you've got in there?
Let's have a look. So what does it say in the back end? It says 121 published.
Nice.
Six in draft.
Yeah, okay. And do they bind well with your... So if I was back to the WP extended side of things, obviously one of the things that you tout is your code snippets manager. Is there any sort of integration there between those two things, or is it more a case of you go to your Snippet Club, so, copy it and paste it?
Yeah, so I started Snippet Club in 2021. That was the first post that I had. Uh-huh. And WP Extended's only been about the last year or so, 2024. Yeah. So there's no integration, and I don't think I would want to add it because it just adds, you know, unnecessary adding the licensing. The way that Snippet Club is built in the back end in terms of the membership is just a nightmare, because I did it all custom when there wasn't really that many good solutions out there.
Okay. Sounds like you need some snippets.
I need to update it to a better licensing system. But a lot of them are just, you know, some of them just like one or two lines of code. But they're not all just copy and paste. Sometimes there are solutions that require you to use the UI, whether it's like adding ACF fields and it says go to the ACF, you know, field group page, add these fields and then add the snippet.
Got it.
There's some bigger tutorials and stuff. Yeah, so some of the tutorials and are literally just copy and paste snippets. You just copy the snippet and paste it into your child theme, whatever, whereas some of them are more in-depth integrations. And for example, I built an integration where you could connect the OMDB API, which is like an open source version of IMDb, with WordPress and ACF.
Okay.
So you could type in the name of a film and it would automatically populate all your ACF fields for you with the information nice. From the API.
Yeah.
And so things like that, where there's more than just one step to kind of integrate it. Creating custom blocks and all that jazz.
I just find this really curious. And obviously, I don't want you to give away anything that you don't want to give away, but I'm curious as to how popular it is. Like, is this a significant bit of what you do? Does it represent, you know, you've got enough members to sort of keep the thing going? It's just fascinating to me that WordPress is so deep, rich, broad, that a project like this that, you know, I'd never thought of doing, so it's curious from the outside looking in, that's a thing. And I'm amazed. It's brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, it ticks over. It's kind of one of the things that I do alongside all the other stuff.
Yeah.
And it kind of, as and when I write snippets, I upload and post them, really. Yeah. So I kind of just trying to keep it in the background. It doesn't it's not the main thing that I kind of focus on, but yeah, it's enough that it just ticks over.
Yeah. What is it people say? You know, you've got to have multiple revenue streams, that kind of thing. So it's a nice thing to have. The advent of AI, I guess, is where people seem to be finding this kind of stuff now. And, you know, the idea of going and writing snippets for yourself. I wonder if that's going to become a much more popular kind of habit in the future. And I guess time will tell. Anyway, I will bury the links in the show notes to that as well. So we've got two covered so far. And the last thing that you mentioned that you wanted to cover was, well, I mentioned Bangladesh by coincidence a minute ago, was work with WP Manage Ninja. What kind of things are they drinking over there? I have no idea. It's like, whoa, 5 years ago, I had not really heard of that company. Now it feels like they've got a finger in every single possible pie in the WordPress space. So they've got a really credible offering, CRM, tables plugin, forms plugin. They've just launched an entire like WooCommerce rival in FluentCart. They're on a right clip, and your job then is over there to help them market that and make it so that people know what's going on.
So I didn't do marketing per se. I manage this. So they have Facebook communities and they have their own communities inside of Fluent Community, which is one of their own products.
Another one, yeah.
And it's basically just managing, answering questions. So people have comments saying, how do I do X in Fluent Forms, whatever? Or people that have, you know, posted about bugs. So if there's issues or whatever and they post them, I actually talk directly to all of the developers and relay the information. And I also kind of just gauge what the community is kind of asking. So if there's a feature that I'm seeing, okay, there's been like 3-4 posts this week of the same feature request, I will kind of put it to them and say, look, I think this is where we should be focusing the product, or at least the next release or whatever.
You're the secret source of their success.
Yeah.
Coming up with the ideas. That's great.
So it's just kind of managing it and keeping the communication between what users want and what the developers and stuff are. I think the biggest thing the reason why I work with them was because I used to write code snippets on Snippet Club for Fluent Forms and a couple of other products. And I used to be in the Facebook groups every day, pretty much just answering people's questions, because I had done so much research, and because I had been extending, Fluent Forms and all the other products so much for my own client work, I had a deep knowledge of how the actual underlying code base actually worked. So whenever someone was like, can we do this? I'd be like, just look in the code base and see if there's a hook in there or whatever. And so I was just answering people's questions, because I wanted to be helpful. And a lot of it came from when I was first starting out in WordPress. There were so, I had probably a very, very stupid, dumb question of like, how do I do X? And there were some absolutely lovely people, and it goes with the whole community really, that would spend time to help answer my question and give me in depth and their time and knowledge. They've been in the WordPress space for 20 plus years probably at that time. And so it was my way of kind of giving back and going, look, I know a lot about these tools. Let me try and help people. And, they basically said, look, do you want to do what you're doing, but get paid for it?
And I was like, for it.
Sure. So that's how I kind of got to working with them. And they're an incredible bunch of people.
They are
very, very talented.
Very talented. But also there are some, how to describe this? There are some companies for whom the intuitions seem to be like really great. You look at that company and you look at their history and the background and the way that they do things, and you have good thoughts about it. You get the warm and fuzzy feeling about it. They are one of those companies for me, in that they seem to do things very much in the open. Obviously, at the end of the day, they're a for-profit company. They're trying to make money. So, there's all of that. But at the same time, the ethical alignment of what they're doing seems to be really remarkable. A lot of really credible free offerings, and obviously doing things like picking up people in the community who have been helpful and then giving them work and all of that. That's really, really interesting. Yeah, that's amazing. I'm glad you're doing that. That's lovely.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I really enjoy doing is kind of converting what a user wants and kind of converting that to what that looks like for the roadmap and things.
Yeah.
Because from my point of view, I run a business, I run an agency, I work with clients, I use the tools, you know, pretty much daily, at least for the Fluent products. And when you are just developers, you know, most of the team and the Fluent people, they're just building products. They're just building the plugins.
Right, not using it.
They have their own client, right?
Yeah.
And so sometimes, you know, I would get a beta version of the plugin and they'd be like, we got this feature. And I'm like, but why? You know, this is a feature that nobody's asked for. Yes, it is. It is cool. It's a cool feature. Yes, some people may like it, but there are so many other features that we should be shipping that have been requested 3, 4, 5 years ago that still haven't been implemented. And so being able to have that kind of flip side to them and say, look, this is where I think. And again, I've always been of the mindset of, look, I'll give my suggestions, I'll give my opinions, but it's their business at the end of the day. But they do really respect me. And, you know, pretty much all of the feedback I give them, they're kind of like, yeah, I think you're right. And they listen. Because I'm originally a user and now kind of moved over to the other side a bit, but I still do client work. So I still use the tool on a regular basis for the actual reason, right?
That's the secret sauce, isn't it? You need people that are actually using it. They and also the bit that amazes me about what they're doing is that they seem to release like a gigantic product. Like it feels like every 7 months or something like that, something totally enormous comes out. And in the case of, well, we've just had the release of FluentCart, and I saw Jewel, the CEO of WP Managed Ninja, I think it was him, saying that I think there's well over 2,000 stores that are now, you know, flipped over to that and are using that as the e-commerce solution of choice for them. Lots of new emails come in on a fresh basis, advising of updates and different payment gateways and all of this. And you think, okay, that's one thing. And yet they've got all these other things. And no doubt, I'm sure you could speak to this,
they've got about 100 plus in the company.
Yeah.
And they have like dedicated teams for each product. So each product kind of has their own development team.
Wow.
I think they share some of the marketing team. They have an in-house motion graphics person, obviously graphic designers. You know, they have 24/7 support, so they actually have nighttime support just because they get that
level
many support tickets. Yeah. That they have basically a night team that's working around the clock to answer all the questions, and they offer support no matter if you're free or a paid customer. So if you only have the free version of a product that is pro, you still get the same level of support. You still get the access to the support portal. If you're just using one of the free products that they've released, like Fluent SMTP, Fluent Auth, anything like that, again, you get the same level of support and access, which I think is amazing and is probably very expensive to do.
Yeah.
But again, goes back to the morals that they have where, you know, the customers are really at the heart of what they do. And they do care. I think one of the biggest things that's always stood out for me is there was a feature request for Fluent CRM that had been requested for 4 years or so. And everyone was kind of saying, why is this not here? Why is this not here? And he said, he turned around and basically said, look, we could add this feature in 10 minutes. The reason we don't do it is because of the performance impact that it will have. And I think that's something that a lot of companies and a lot of plugin owners don't take into account, is when you're running a product or a plugin on probably thousands of different server types, installations, setups of all scales, it needs to work. It needs to be robust. And so they purposefully don't add certain features because they know the impact where, yes, a small fraction of people may have a 64 gigabyte server, which is the sole website, and, you know, throw thousands of pounds at it a year. But then you've got people that are on shared hosting, and you need to make sure that it balanced. And I think that there is the integrity that they have.
It's
amazing. One of the reasons why I love working with them.
Kind of amazing to me as well that there's enough like I said earlier, breadth and depth inside. So you've got the internet, and then if you shrink that down, you've got CRMs. Sorry, you've got CMSs, and then if you shrink that down, you've got WordPress as one of those. And then if you shrink that down, you've got plugins. And like, there's a 100-person company that are doing a plugin for a CMS. It's nuts. It's absolutely nuts that there's that scale and miraculous. And so all of the things that we've talked about today, you know, the community and whether or not that community is skewing older, and, you know, it sort of seems to come full circle. It'll be so interesting to see how WordPress performs. I know a lot of people like to be bullish about it and talk in very confident terms about, oh, it'll be here in another 20 years. That's not entirely obvious to everybody, but it'll be interesting to see if the weight of these products and the fact that they're so powerful and so interesting and affordable. Let's be honest, they're really affordable compared to, you know, SaaS solutions where you pay probably quite a lot per month. Be interesting to see definitely. How the community evolves and develops over time. We've kind of reached a 50-minute mark, so I think we should probably think about knocking it on the head. But before we do that, an opportunity for you to just say where we can find you. I will put the links to the properties of yours that we've mentioned already. I won't try and butcher the URLs another time. But is there anywhere else? Do you hang out on, you know, any of the social platforms? And do you want to drop a handle?
I mean, most of the social platforms are my personal stuff. I'm on Facebook. I hang out a lot in a lot of the Facebook groups that are on there for WordPress, things like the admin bar, dynamic WordPress, a bunch of those. Mm-hmm. I'm always, you know, open for chat if people want to message me or whatever. I love talking nerdy WordPress stuff
and yay,
all that jazz. But yeah, and then, you know, also just building our different products.
Well, very nice. I'm so glad that there is at least one person who is of your age in the WordPress community, and I hope that there are many more in the future. Taylor, thank you so much for chatting to me today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, that's all we've got for you today. Just a quick mention, if you are interested in getting your product or service out in front of a WordPress specific audience, wpbuilds.com/advertise to find out more, or just send me an email. admin@wpbuilds.com will do the trick. All right, we'll be back on Monday for This Week in WordPress. I'll push that out as a podcast episode the following day, but also back next week for an interview. See you then. Here comes some cheesy music. Take care. Bye-bye for now.